Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and the homie. I'm the homie. I keep doing this rock thing.
You talking about yourself in the third person.
I know, bro. I'm geeking. I'm doing some rock things. I'm doing this rock thing for real. And myself, Ole. What's going on, Will T? Hey, what's going on, Ray?
Everything is copacetic on this end, man. No complaints. Beautiful day today. Excited to talk some sports with my guys. You know, go from there.
What's going on, Ray?
Excited about hockey, Will?
Of course, man. I couldn't sleep. I was just so giddy. I was excited. I've been thinking about this all day.
I don't really like your attitude.
How about you like my attitude?
I don't really sound the excited. I think this like the excitement isn't real.
How many times in our text, in our email, I mean in our text chain have I said puck talk?
Yeah, you have been saying puck talk.
Puck talk.
I know you have been saying that. Yeah. This is true. But I want your excitement to be like genuine. You know what I'm saying? I want the people to feel it.
What makes you think my excitement is not genuine? I showed up, right?
You know what? You're in the building.
I'm in the building. I showed up early. I'm ready to talk some puck.
Yeah, I mean
puck talk.
We may not have to because it seems like the guest is like super late, so we may not even have to talk puck.
I mean, well, let's get the show started, and we'll see how it goes from there.
But yeah, I just want to see. You know what? Well, let's tell the people first off before we go into sports about our journey to
yes, we
PA.
Went to the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, don't do no African voice, bro. That joint is not yo, Ray. You had to, this dude is doing some coming to America voice, and it sounds like them little fake African voices, dude.
I mean, I can hear him right now, but I understand where he's coming from. He's making jollof rice. He's trying to become more focused. So nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. But nah, we Friday night we rode up to Philly, watched the game, and grabbed some cheesesteaks and had some drinks. So yeah. it was cool. Man, I enjoyed my Friday, man. It was cool, even though the weather was gloomy as hell.
Yeah, bro.
And it was cold.
Cold.
But I enjoyed it, man. Road trip. It's always good to get out, see something, go to a new, different environment, man.
It was dope, man. We had a good time, man. Yeah,
absolutely.
Had a good time. Ray, you wish you was there, man.
Will T, is it water or is it water?
Water.
Hey, yo. You heard that? Ray, you know why he wasn't official? Because he wasn't rocking one important thing, dog. He was rocking these sandals, dog.
hey, bro, listen. I'm not gonna lie. I'm at home, obviously. I'm sorry I can't be in person today. I'm sorry I couldn't join you guys in Philly. I got to work on that. But anyway, it was some dudes walking down my street. Yolanda was like, yeah, you know, I think they're going to the African Brothers house. I was like, obviously. They got on small shirts. And they all
got hate shot.
Like, you could tell on the show. Wale Texas talking about, I wear a medium or large. I'm like, what?
Bro, don't fry me. I do wear a medium large. I do wear a large. And my large fits, bro. Don't do that to me. It fits and it's swell and it's perfect. Don't do that.
No, sir. You can't wash it.
Hey, you're about right, though. I can't really wash it like that because then it shrinks.
It's like old Navy jeans. They be tight.
Shut up.
Y'all know it's true.
I know it's true. It is. It's like the rugged warehouse jeans. Them joints be tight as I don't know what.
Oh, you never had
really
one
went back.
I did. Hey, real food do real things, man. I know. Man, what's it at, man? It's like ruined up. But you know what? Will's right. We're going to have to like...
Start with the intro.
We should. You know, it's fast.
You got John Morant and now looking like he's out for the playoffs.
Yeah, you're right. So let me go into the story. You're right, bro. Let's go into the sports stuff, like sports intro and whatnot. All right. Empire, like I mentioned, we're part of the Urban Sports Team, also part of AmpireMedia.com. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, you make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content.
And of course, don't forget to tweet the Urban Sports Team at Urban Sports Team. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Team and like our Urban Sports Team Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Team Facebook group. Just search the Urban Sports Team, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates.
We'll see.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Hey, young Ray, you watch, no, real talk, Ray, you watch, your kids watch wrestling. I mean, your kid watch wrestling, right?
Actually, both my kids. You said both? It right with the S. They both watch.
Oh, I'm sorry. Both of them watch.
You know,
I'm
the
sorry.
Older one is,
see, the older,
is a little right. different.
Okay. So, you know, so they watch SmackDown. You know the Nigerian dude called Apollo?
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a fake Nigerian voice, too. Will sounds, that's what Will sounds like. He sounds like the fake Apollo. He likes Apollo, the fake Nigerian voice. That's who he sounds like. That thing does not sound right. You sound like you're supposed to be a British Nigerian, but not really. I don't even know. I'm trying to figure out what that is. I don't even know what it is. Anyway, like I mentioned.
I'm working on it. I'm shopping
work
it, man.
On it, man.
It's
keep
get
working,
better.
Man.
It's
don't forget,
better.
Man. I tried to do, like, I was an English Nigerian. I wanted to be like an English Idris Elba. He's not Nigerian, but I wanted to be like an African.
Really?
Yeah, it didn't work.
It didn't work out?
Man, it didn't work. So when you take, where take us, gents? It still doesn't work. It doesn't work. I've been trying it. Anyway, we're still waiting on WNST's Washington Capitals reporter, Ed Frankovich. He's supposed to join us to talk about the Capitals Stanley Cup first round matchup against the Florida Panthers. The series is tied 2-2. We'll hopefully we'll get that knocked off. If we don't, we'll talk about something else. At 8:20, we'll talk about the NBA playoffs. Maybe we're talking about that now, actually. At 8:40, we'll talk about Dimitri Bivol.
Bivol.
That's how it is. Mm-hmm. Bivol.
Dimitri Bivol
upsetting Canelo Alvarez. And finally. Oh. What? You want to say something?
Sorry.
Right?
Go ahead. I'm going to jump in a minute.
All right, cool. Finally, in our segment, HBCU Corner, we have a pre-taped interview with Bowie State University football coach Damon Wilson. All right, Ray, what you want to say?
I was going to say, we're going to skip ahead to a degree.
Go ahead.
Can we talk about the new pound-for-pound boxing list that just came out today?
You want to do that now?
Yeah, I mean,
if Ed Frankovic isn't going to call in, I mean, we love hockey and all, but we're not.
I know, I'm disappointed we're not talking about it right now.
Boxing, we're going to talk Canelo.
Let's talk soccer instead or something else.
Hot topic.
But talk this soccer?
This pound for pound ranking list actually is not surprising at the top, but I feel as though it is surprising considering where Tyson Fury is and now Shakur Stevenson being in the top 10 on that list.
Okay, well, Ray, break it down for us. Tell us the list.
Okay, so number one is Terrence Crawford.
Uh-huh.
Number two is Canelo Alvarez.
Wow, okay.
Number three, Oleksandr Usyk. Y'all got to help me with some names.
You got some of this list. I can't even see the list, bro.
Number four. Well, what do you think about Canelo losing his spot at the top after one loss? He's been more active than everybody else. I'm gonna say that.
So, as
y'all respond, I'm gonna send you the list so you can look at it.
So I think it's fair to lose a spot. It's wild because a lot of people have been tweeting us about this. You know, has been tweeting us because I had posted this on, you know, on Twitter and whatnot. It's hard because he fought. This dude is bigger. Like Bivol was bigger. Right, skilled. He's undefeated. Right, so he's fighting an elite boxer. Right, he is an elite boxer. But then you lost decisively. Like he dominated the fight. I don't care what the others. I don't know what the scorecards was all about.
It was 115.
I know what it was. I don't know what they were scoring, but he dominated that fight. Oh, and then we have Ed on the line right now too. Like I hear a beat. And let me merge Ray. Let me see if I can add. Actually, I'm happy. Hey, Ed.
Hey guys, sorry about it.
No problem. No
late
problem.
Coming home from the rink with my boys.
Oh, no,
no problem,
problem
at
no
all,
problem.
Man.
We'll continue to talk. Well, I have to.
All right, man. Back. Well, right now we have WNST.
No. Talk about the boxing. I'm about to get Ray on.
Dude. Oh, okay.
Can you talk about the list? Talk about your opinion of the list.
The list. Well, I'll say this. Like you, mm-hmm. I do think Canelo does deserve to take that. You know, a rung lower on that mm-hmm. list. You know, even though. He lost to a fighter who was, from a skill perspective and a physical perspective, was bigger than him.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they will put him at number two because to me that says, okay, if or when Bud Crawford faces against Errol Spence, okay. And if he were to lose, then the winner of that fight would, you know, will still be number one, but there's an opportunity for Canelo to move himself back up to number one.
Definitely. And we'll get into that. We'll continue that discussion.
Yeah, that's what you call BSing for us to get.
You sure did. Good job. I am so proud of you. I am so proud of you. All right, right now we have WNST's Washington Capitals reporter, Ed Frankovic, on the line. What's up, Ed?
Hey, how are you guys doing? I miss talking to you.
Oh, same here, man.
Same here, man. We appreciate you coming on for us tonight.
Thank you so much, Ed. We do appreciate it. So, Ed, I'm going to start you off real quick. In the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Capitals and Florida Panthers series is tied 2-2. In game four, the Capitals had a 2-1 lead with seconds left in the third period and fell 3-2 in OT. How crushing was that loss?
That was a pretty big loss, and I'll tell you why it was even worse, because the Capitals did not play well. I mean, they were not the team we saw on Saturday that lit it up. They had 9 shots the last 45 minutes of the game, and that's just not good. I don't know if the players weren't dialed in or what was going on, but the coaching staff, they have to adjust. They have to compete in the playoffs, and to get 9 shots in 45 minutes just tells me that you're not dialed in. So, not only was the loss crushing, they tried to just hang on to a 1-goal lead, but it doesn't bode well for them going back to Florida.
Okay. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com. Right now, we are rapping with WNST's Caps insider, Ed Frankovic. Ed, let me ask you this question. We know how random that the NHL playoffs are, right? Or we've been told that. How should fans evaluate, you know, Washington still, you know, after 4 games, making it 2-2 with this Florida Panthers team, a team that a lot of people thought could potentially get to the Stanley Cup?
Well, I think we've seen spurts where the Capitals are playing at that level they played at in 2018 when they won the Cup. The problem, again, with the Caps, and it's been this way since they won the Cup, is a lack of consistency. You'll watch them. For example, the third period they played, I believe it was game one. The third period was incredible. And then I watched on Saturday, and the way they played defensively, committing to blocking shots. I mean, Samsonov gives up a horrible goal to make it 1-0. And you're thinking, oh, man, here it goes. The Caps are going to fall apart. They're getting no goaltending. But then they committed very heavily to blocking shots, covering people defensively, and being on the puck and outnumbering the Panthers on the puck. But then, you know, you look at last night, they get 9 shots in 45 minutes, so they're not working. They're not doing what they need to do. And when you look at the Penguins-Rangers series, the Penguins are outworking the Rangers, and Shesterkin's not playing well for the Rangers, and the Penguins are up 3-1. So the Capitals, if they want any chance to win the series, they got to get back to work in every shift like they did in Game 3. It's got to be Game 3, that type of effort all over the ice if they want to beat this team. Because Florida is more talented. They were the number one team in the league. But again, Florida's not playoff experience like the Caps are. And that's the disappointing thing for me, is that the Capitals just don't seem to remember what it took to win the Cup or even win a play. They haven't won a playoff series in 4 years. It's very disappointing.
Ed, this is Ray, and it's good to talk to you. When Barry Trotz got fired, he's like the best coach ever to get fired all the time. I thought about you instantly, so it's great to hear your voice today. And I just want to ask, I have one question that's been assigned to me by the producer, but I have to ask all questions. Why is it that this team seems so inconsistent? Like, fans on social media were killing them game two for their poor power play. And then, like you just described, game three, they come out and they played almost a near-perfect game. Why is there such inconsistency with this team, considering the playoff experience they had?
Yeah, and I think one of the big problems is the goaltending, right? I think that's a problem. Mm-hmm. They do not have elite goaltending at all. Vanacek was, you know, he did what he could for a while, but he was in over his head. And I think what happened in that game three was they came out strong and he gave up a couple of weak ones. And, you know, the team just let down. The mental resolve wasn't there. Again, you know, to answer your question, if you want to be consistent, you got to have a mental resolve to want to work as hard as you can on every shift. And I think that that's lacking in this hockey team, especially with Tom Wilson out of the lineup.
Sweet. So you mentioned goaltending. Who's going to be the goaltender this coming game five?
I mean, I think he's earned the net. He's played decent. The problem with Sammy is he just gives up a stinker every now and then. Uh-huh. You just can't win in the playoffs giving up a bad goal every game. They managed to overcome it on Saturday, giving up that early, really bad goal. But again, the team played really well in front of them. And I think they don't have Braden Holtby in his prime, let's be honest. And they don't have Olaf Kolzik in his prime. These two guys are nowhere near that level. And it's hard to win in the playoffs unless you get everybody committed and working. Pittsburgh's on down to their third goalie, but they're winning because the team is committed, right? And the Capitals have shown stretches of that. But, you know, without Tom Wilson, that's a big factor. And Ovi's definitely not 100%, but he's playing well. But, yeah, on Barry Trotz, he lasted 4 years with Lou Lamoriello, which is pretty good. I mean, if you look at Lou Lamoriello's record, but he's fired Coach 16 times in 35 seasons. So, Barry's going to end up somewhere. He'll end up somewhere good. He'll be fine.
So, Ed, we got a tweet from our friend George, and he tweeted, it was a crushing loss, but I can't even count the number of times that – exact script has played out the last 3 years. You any comments about that?
Well, your tweeter is spot on, right? They've had chances to win series. I mean, against Carolina the first year after Trotz left, there's no reason they should have lost that series. Uh-huh. I mean, they let it get away from them down in Carolina. They had all the momentum. I think they thought that they could just show up and win. Again, I was not a Todd Rivlin fan, as you know. I don't think he's a good head coach. I think he's a good assistant.
Yeah.
And then they just haven't. And then the next year was that crazy COVID season, and Carlson's got a bad knee, so I kind of throw that one out. But, you know, then last year, first game, they beat Boston. But, again, you could see the commitment wasn't there. They weren't playing the right way, and their D was slow. They had Chara back there, and he's ancient. He, you know, Lamoriello brought him in the island. He just can't skate anymore. He doesn't belong in the league anymore. So, but the Capitals' defense is much more mobile. I mean, I'm really happy about Ferravari. I mean, he has a bright future. Dmitry Orlov has played well. Carlson has played well. They have to hide the guys like Justin Schultz. Nick Jensen's been good, but Justin Schultz and Van Riemsdyk, you have to hide a bit. But the defense, the blue line is way better than past years. But the consistency up front, especially with Wilson coming out of that lineup, is just a huge hole. And it's going to be hard to overcome. They're going to have to try and find a way to play at the level they did in game three if they're gonna find a way to win this game down there in Florida tomorrow night.
Well, hopefully they can step up without Tom Wilson. But, Ed, before we let you go, we appreciate you being on. Before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to add? Anything you want to drop? Any type of – you want any promotion? And you want to promote anything? Feel free to do
no,
so.
You know, you guys are it for me, you know. So I come on and do your show. I love the urban sports scene. So I'm really happy. You feel free to reach out to me. And I apologize about being on a little late. But, you know, you can get a hold of me anytime. I love talking sports with you guys. I'm happy you guys are hockey fans, you know, and we have a lot of other common interests with football and basketball and all the other sports. So it's always a pleasure coming on your show, chatting with you guys. I appreciate you having me on. I love what you're doing. I follow you on Instagram. I keep up with you guys, seeing who you have on each week. I love it. So keep doing the good stuff.
Guys. Thanks, Ed.
We greatly appreciate that, man. Before you go, Ed,
we got to have you on to talk Ravens versus Commanders, the differences in how the franchise are run. There's some people out here who have misinformation and is killing us right now. And we need your backing.
We do, though. When you have time, we do need your backing. This is true.
I would love to have that conversation. Right. You know, I have a lot of friends that are Commanders fans, aka Redskins, Skins. I grew up in Laurel in the DMV, right between the two cities.
Yeah.
My dad had Colts tickets. That's why I became a Baltimore fan.
Oh, wow.
But the Redskins, though, in the 80s and early 90s, I mean, just, you know, what a dynasty with Bobby Bethard and Joe Gibbs, right? They won with three different quarterbacks, three different running backs. Mm-hmm. But what did they have consistently?
The offensive line.
And I think the Ravens recently have gotten away a little bit from their lines. And a coach.
And a coach.
Ravens got away from their lines, and I love what they did in the draft, where they just drafted a lot of linemen, DBs. You got to build your team in football on the line of scrimmage out. You have to have a quarterback. I mean, the Ravens have a quarterback, but they need to get something around him.
Definitely, I agree. That's because he's a good kid. He has a lot of talent. Not potential. He is the guy. He's no potential about it. He's done what he needs to do. So yeah, I agree.
Yep.
Well, Ed,
we'll be in touch, Ed. Don't worry.
We will. Thanks again, Ed.
We'll be in touch during the summer to further discuss this.
Yep. Ray, all you guys, be well, buddy.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you guys. Right. Take care now.
Take care.
You hear that, Bram?
Yeah, you hear that? You hear that?
We go to bring Bram and Ed
at the same time. Yes,
and we're going to talk the differences. Yes. And we're going to hash it out.
Facts,
and we're going to have a big Baltimore afterwards, even though I'm not a fan of EDC. Sorry.
I mean, should I read this? I mean, I thought it was only two people on the show,
Wally and Ray. You know what happens, though? You know why. We know why it happens, right? What do you always say? Break time. So that's why. That's keeping the buck. That's why it happened. I'll read it for you because you don't want to
read it. It's all good, man. Listen, I got thick skin, man. All right, we'll talk about the NBA playoffs after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
On Empire Media. But
it's empiremedia.com.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Wole, and the homie Ray Jeezy. And we're part of Amp Pyre Media at amppyremedia.com.
Yes, sir. Game 5 of the Sixers Heat Series is taking place right now. If you'd have heard the guys during the break, you'd have known that's what they're paying attention to. But we got to show Ed Frank a big love because they held it together even though they were focusing on the game. Joel Embiid looking like he might be injured. The series is currently tied 2-2. Thoughts on the series, Will T?
It's been an entertaining and interesting series, especially these last two games, games 3 and 4, with Joel Embiid back. Now they're back in Miami. Miami was, you know, did get out to a lead through the second quarter, through 6 minutes and 11 seconds of the second quarter. Mm-hmm. They're up 12. But, you know, what I've noticed anyway is, since Embiid's had that face mask on, he hasn't been as physical and hasn't been as dominant as he's been through the regular season and the first round of the playoffs. But ultimately, like I said, I think this Miami team is too deep for Philadelphia to overcome. That's just my opinion. I know that when you look at this team, and Wole, me and you were actually having an interesting conversation about this team. You know, you look at Miami versus Philadelphia and the rosters, you know, obviously, you know, if you said, okay, let's pick, you know, if I had to put if you put both teams together and then you said, I'm going to, you know, give me and you a pick, the first two picks are probably going to be Embiid and Harden.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my argument was, I think picks 3 through maybe 8 or 9 are going to be guys from Miami. And I think that depth is ultimately what's going to take them over the top.
Yeah, I think that Miami is a deeper team than the Sixers. But, you know, you got players like, you know, I love, like, Thybulle. I think he's one of the better defensive players in basketball.
That and also better coaching.
Yeah. Better coaching. Yeah. Spo's a better coach. I think at this particular point in time, Spo's a better coach. But you got – I like Thybulle. I think Tobias Harris is a high percentage scorer. He doesn't need to shoot the ball X amount of times to score 20. He's a guy who can score at a nice efficient clip. Doesn't take dumb shots. I think they have talent enough around their two megastars to be better than certain teams. Like, for instance, the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, if you told me, were they deeper than some other teams that they won their championship with? No, they weren't. They just were more dominant at that certain position, like the center position, and you had a two-guard who could score buckets, and you had good role players like Derek Fisher and whatever. They weren't deep. but you had two stars, two studs, and the rest can take you to a certain point.
But I think what you alluded to, and that's a fair point, you know, is right. You know, Shaq and Kobe, the difference between Embiid and Shaq is this Embiid that we're seeing right now isn't playing with that level of dominance and physicality that we're used to seeing from him during the regular season and the first round of the playoffs.
I agree. To go to your point, is he has his injuries. He's like more concerned with the injury rather than just playing basketball. And we've seen in the past that certain players who've had facial injuries or jaws wearing the mask, they tend in the postseason, it doesn't bother them. You know, some of them play even better. You saw Rip Hamilton used to play better with the mask. Kobe would play with the mask. And, you know, some people kind of take it on as a badge, almost like a badge of honor. Like, all right, you know, I'm hurt, but I'm still give you this 30. You know what I'm saying? And it's not going to hurt my game. You know what I'm saying? You may look at it as a weakness. I'm going to look at it as a strength, and I'm going to give you buckets. So it just depends who you are and your mentality, right?
I don't necessarily disagree with either of your points. I'm not going to add too much to it because you all summed it up pretty well. Although I want to highlight that most of the pressure, I said this last week, or actually that was a different show. Sorry, I'm all over the place. But I said it last week when I was on air on another show that the pressure in my eyes, not on Embiid, it's on Doc Rivers. Uh-huh. Doc Rivers has a history, of course, of his teams not performing well in the playoffs. And right now, because of his questionable decision in the first round to keep Joel on the court, and then Joel, of course, getting injured, people already adding fuel to the fire that he is not the guy to carry a franchise to a championship. Of course, you have KG, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce. That's easier. But right now, he's coaching a generational talent in Joel, so I think there's as much pressure on him, if not more, on Doc Rivers than Embiid. That's just my personal opinion. I love Tyrese Maxey's growth.
I think me too. I think Willis is
correct in terms of the roster construction. And Eric Spoelstra has developed so well as a coach over the years that he may have the edge in terms of playoff coaching.
Yeah, I think he does have the. I agree. I think he does have the edge as playoff coaching. He knows how to pick the push the buttons. And also, I'd like to give Pat Riley and their front office some credit too, because they bring in guys who fit the Miami culture, right? Like when they got P.J. Tucker. If you said P.J. Tucker, which team do you fit? If you're not with the Milwaukee Bucks, who do you fit the most? It's the Miami Heat, right? Like, it's a perfect fit. It's like that grit and grind mentality. You may say he's like an old school Memphis Grizzlies type of player, right? Like that type of team and that type of culture. So he fits the Miami Heat. I'm surprised that this, you know, even though, you know, you're still in striking range being down 14, because right now the score is 36-50. But I'm surprised with the Embiid, what they were, the momentum they're riding in Philadelphia, I'm surprised, like, this game isn't closer.
Well, I mean, there are a couple things. Mm-hmm. One, I believe that last night when they got into Miami, Doc Rivers gave those guys the night off, and they're in Miami. You know what that means.
Okay.
That's one. And two, as I told you, man, this team, I'm not going to say lives and die with Embiid, but Embiid definitely sets the tone for this team at this point. And the guys, the guys on that roster, they go off of his energy.
Yeah.
And I think anyone who has seen him play over these, these past couple of games knows that he is physically playing as physically imposing as he used to. And I think that's because of the mask. I think he has a mental hurdle that is kind of blocking him and preventing him from being his usual dominant self during the that he was during the regular season, being the NBA's leading scorer.
Yeah, I definitely can see it, because I think he should be playing more forceful in this game five. This is the swing game. This is a game that if you could take, you can take control of the series.
I think it's 84% of the time whoever wins game five in a tied up series, seven games, wins the series.
I think it's a game that if Embiid plays to his capability, it's a game that it shouldn't be a blowout. Put it that way. It shouldn't be a blowout, but we'll see. All right, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media at empiremedia.com. All right, in another Game 5 matchup, the Phoenix Suns with Coach of the Year Monty Williams will take on the Dallas Mavericks later on tonight. First off, what are your thoughts on Monty Williams being Coach of the Year, and what do you expect from the Suns tonight? The series is tied 2-2, right?
Hey, of course we're biased on this show. We love Monty Williams, former guest, PD County, a resident, alum of Potomac High School, just an all-around good brother. it's good to see the success with the Suns. I don't think it's talked about enough how much he's turned that franchise around. Many critics said last season was a fluke because of injuries to other teams. Because Anthony Davis wasn't there, that's the only reason the Suns advanced. Well, this year, I believe the Suns are proving that as a group, a well-coached group with versatile talent, such as Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges, that they can either equal or exceed their success from last season. Obviously, their regular season, they had more wins. So I'm hoping that he'll get the credit that he's due, and I'm hoping to end in a title for the Suns. I'm impressed with, of course, what he's done, considering they went to the bubble, not even being in the playoff or play-in picture, and fast forward just two seasons, they're championship contenders and they're considered favorites. So just an amazing job. I believe that right now, the reason why the series is tied is because the Dallas Mavericks are playing like the tougher team. There's one criticism I have about the Suns. Sometimes they tend to play a bit soft and they play finesse basketball, and you cannot win like that in the playoffs. They're going to have to step up the physicality, and also they're going to have to become mentally tough. Ed Frankovic talked about this that just now. You got Chris Paul. Of course, he should be paying attention to his family. But right now, if you look on social media, that's all they're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you got to block that stuff out, and you got to focus on the prize, because Chris Paul, all he needs is a championship to cement his legacy. So Monty Williams, this whole Greg Popovich coaching tree that he's competing with, I mean, Udoka, who else is a Greg Popovich?
Isn't it now
Tyler Jenkins.
Yes,
from Memphis.
Absolutely.
Mike Budenholzer.
So you got these guys who are
– his tree is like that.
Who are right, of course, who are out here coaching that Popovich style, that physical, tough style. And I feel like that's what the Suns lack. So overall, of course, they play an excellent brand of basketball. They don't even shoot as many threes as most NBA teams. So I love the Suns, but that brother coaching across from that light-skinned point guard, Jason Kidd, you got to give him some love, too.
Should be in L.A.
He's turning this scrappy group. The roster isn't even that great. People are laughing on Twitter,
bro.
Like, this is the ex-Wizards. It's Dinwiddie and Bertans out on the court. And they're even right now. So it's an amazing series. Not the most entertaining in my eyes either, but I love Monty Williams. I love the Suns team because I feel as though they're the most talented in terms of just as a group, and they have the most cohesiveness.
The wrong coach left L.A. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I would say you made some good points, Ray. The only thing I would say is if you notice during those two games when Phoenix has been able to win, when Dallas has been able to win, if you notice during the season, Phoenix has done a great job, and I think I said this last week, of packing the lane and running teams off of the three-point line. Those two losses, if you see Luka's been able to get by guys one-on-one and create passing lanes to, you know, for guys to hit open threes, and guys have been late on their rotation. So I think that's, to me, that's probably one of the bigger reasons why Phoenix hasn't been successful in those two games. But like, I'm hoping also that Coach Monty Williams is able to get a championship this year. He's just a tremendous testament as a man, yeah, and also as a coach. And also, if you read more about his story, just perseverance. You know, some of the things his family has suffered over the past couple of years. It's just great to see guys who like that, who have tremendous values, and is also a good coach. And you talk about roster built, you know, the makeup of a roster. That team is literally, and I think I said this last year, just one for one whenever they go to their second unit. You know, like, you can't easily replace guys like Chris Paul and Devin Booker, but you know, Payne and Shambert, their games, definitely not on the level of those two, but there are definitely some similarities between, you know, that backup backcourt and the starting backcourt, the way they play.
Cam Johnson.
Yeah, Cam Johnson. That's a young man that's going to get paid.
He should be a starter, and he's a valuable player off the bench. You know what I mean? Like, he can start on multiple teams. They have a deep team, a deep squad. Amber Alert on, and now I have to mute Ray's because Ray's hooked up to my phone.
Yeah.
But either way, once this Amber Alert thing goes off, I'll put Ray back on. Ray, I'll let you know when you're back on. Thank you. I think we should be good now. Ray, you're good now. Ray?
Thanks, man.
There you go. I had to make sure. So, but when you look at, and also I wanted to say this before Amber Alert thing hit my phone. I wanted to say that if you want to listen to Monty Williams, Coach Monty Williams, and how great he is. You just listen to an archive of Urban Sports Scene, you know, interview with him and him and
cross
us.
Promoting.
You know what I'm saying? So just search like Urban Sports Scene Monty Williams. It pops up. You know what I'm saying? You just know how great Monty is, it just as a person, as a human being. But in terms of, you know, what he's brought, what he's done with the Phoenix Suns in 2 years, Ray, you're right. You know, a lot of people make up stuff about why they got to the finals or whatever and use all the excuses or whatnot. But the fact of the matter is that what he's done with the Phoenix Suns within the 3 seasons he's been there has been amazing. Is it 3 or 4? I want to say 3 or 4. Like, I know that even the bubble, and was he there before the bubble?
Yes, I believe so.
Right?
Yeah.
He was there before the bubble, right? For about 4 years. Mm-hmm. The turnaround has been amazing, right? It has been, because he's taught this team a winning culture, and he's done it with baby steps.
No, I'm sorry. That was his first year,
right? So 3 years, I'm right. Yeah.
I thought you meant.
No, I'm right. This is third year. So he has built a winning culture since he's gotten there, a winning personality, a winning mindset. Because in the bubble, they were playing in that bubble for, like, they're winning. They were playing for something. Right.
Undefeated. They played hard.
Yeah, they undefeated. They played hard. Then he built that into number to year two. All you did was add Chris Paul, another guy with a winning, a point guard. We all want to get a ring. Want to see get a ring because he's been one of the best point guards of, well, the probably to me the best point guard of his generation. Right. Yes. Now, and has in my opinion, he's been the best point guard in his generation. And add that into what Monty has built in terms of a culture, which was a perfect fit. Took him to the NBA Finals. Year three right now, had the best record in the NBA, has an opportunity again to get back to the Finals. I don't think there's any luck about it, any circumstances. Nope. You could say the same thing about the Golden State Warriors. No one used that against them. So I don't want to hear this about Monty Williams and this whole regime and this whole unit. What he's done with this team and how he's coached and how James Jones, as well as in terms of as a general manager, has constructed a team and a roster of players that Will has talked about, that they are deep. Like, they can man for man, they can give you bodies off the bench. Okay, they can come off the bench with JaVale McGee, Cameron Payne. I'm trying to think of, or there's a couple few other individuals off their bench.
Shamber.
That's another player.
Torian Craig.
It's somebody else, and there's another player, but I can't think of him. I'm not going to like try.
JaVale McGee.
I mentioned JaVale. But you also, I mean, on your starting
unit. Is Mac Biombo?
That's another good one, too. You know what I mean? Like, they have bigs. They have everything you need to win a championship. They got a killer in Booker. They got a killer in Paul when healthy. They have.
They got Aaron Holiday.
And also they got the grunt worker in Crowder. They have a big, a versatile young big who can dive to the basket, play defense, DeAndre Ayton, who was the number one pick overall. So they are a super talented team. They have everything you want. They're well coached, and coaching is important in the NBA, and they have the right guy to lead them. I think, you know, game five is important for them to set the tone. I feel like they have to blow out the Mavericks to let them know, all right, you're not supposed to be on the court with us. And I think game six, they take them out. They blow them out in game five. I believe they take them out in game six.
I believe Suns and six as well.
What you think, Will?
No, I believe Suns and six also.
That's what I'm talking about. I love when
the board.
I love it.
Tomorrow has a couple game five matchups as well. Warriors versus Grizzlies is one of those matchups. And Ja Morant looking like he's out for the playoffs. What do you guys think about that series?
I was disappointed. I'm not going to say shocked, but disappointed to hear that Ja Morant would be out. Even though, you know, the Warriors are up 3-1 currently, that was a very interesting, you know, series, just the level of competitiveness.
Even yesterday, without Ja.
Yeah, but even without Ja yesterday. And that team, you know, that Memphis Grizzlies team is so young, right?
Uh-huh.
So you never want to see a superstar player like Ja Morant go out in the playoffs because, you know, You always ask, what if?
Yeah.
But I'll say this, though. That's a young team, and I think, you know, if they aren't able to advance past the Warriors, that's just one of those, you know, that another step, you know, on that level. You know, as we've all seen, great teams, they have to go through these things.
Even
you know,
the
they
Suns.
They have those hurdles. You know, if you think back to the Suns in the bubble, right, they weren't able to make it. Weren't able to make it into the playoffs. They, even though they won 8 straight, then last year, you know, with the in the NBA Finals, they came across Giannis, who played a series for the ages, and you know, he was extremely dominant. And then, you know, this year, so you know, as you see the Suns, you know, matriculating and, you know, taking different steps and going through that process, you know, even if Ja Morant isn't able to play, this will be one of the, you know, this is great as a sports fan to see this team go through that process, and hopefully one day they will make it to the NBA Finals and win a championship.
Man, I feel bad for Ja. This is a stage that I know he wanted. I mean, he was looking dominant. Even in the loss, the game that he did get hurt, he was looking dominant, right? He gave the Warriors like 40 plus in game two when they needed it. Game three, I believe, was like 30 plus. Then he got hurt. And then in this game here, you know, game four, where they, you know, which they didn't have without him. They were competitive, had a good opportunity. They had a good opportunity to steal game four and make the series 2-2. But you had Steph down the stretch, Draymond with a key block to steal the deal for the Warriors to win. But I feel for Ja, like I do. I feel for Ja because he was pulling the stage. This was the stage. You're going against the Warriors. It doesn't get any bigger than that. You know, a healthy Warrior squad. This is a squad that, you know, this unit with those three in Klay, Steph, and Draymond, you know, they're champions. You look at them as champions. And this was an opportunity to kind of like say, you know what, we here. Like, we definitely here. You got to see me. And he's not even – and the thing about it, what was dope about Ja, and if you, anybody who watched game two, he wasn't scared of the moment. He wasn't scared of him. He wasn't scared to talk trash to Steph. He wasn't scared to talk trash to Draymond. He wants to smoke, right? So you kind of want to see that kid in that – with that in that spotlight, because everybody doesn't watch Memphis Grizzlies games. Like, we all don't. You know what I'm saying? So now you get the opportunity to kind of brand yourself even more for everybody to see on prime time.
Only smoke I want is brisket. Smoked brisket.
Smoked brisket? Yeah. Only man. Smoke, my man. Smoked brisket.
Fellas, by the way, the Washington Mystics are putting on a performance, boy. Just
Slim balling.
Crazy second half turnaround.
She balling. Tonight, man. My girl
balling. They're up by 14 right now on the Aces after being down double digits in the first half. But Celtics Bucks, real quick, Marcus Smart and Al Horford led the way yesterday.
Oh, yeah, they
Giannis
did.
Giannis Antetokounmpo, a little fire in Al Horford, and that man went off, knocking down threes, dunked on Giannis. Good series. That might be the most entertaining, the best defensive series,
yeah,
I believe. So. I believe it's going seven. Who you got in that series?
I believe it's going seven also. Excuse me. But I think that ultimately the Bucks win the series.
I got Boston. I think Boston is playing well. I think, like you mentioned, the coaching tree. I think I want to call him Holly Berry's husband.
No, that's Nina.
Nia Long. That's what I meant. Nia Long.
Ume Udoka.
Yeah. Say it again.
Ume Udoka.
That's a Ume Udoka. Say it again for me again.
Udoka. Ume Udoka.
Ume. He may be Nigerian, so I should know better. But yeah. Nia Long's husband. Excuse me. Thank you for correcting me. I meant to say Nia Long's husband.
I mean, Ume.
You know what you say? All of us say all light skin chicks are looking like. But but yeah. Where was I going with it? Yeah, the Celtics. I had the Celtics winning. I almost forgot what I was thinking about Nia Long. Then I started thinking about Nia Long. But yeah, I got the Celtics winning. I think Jason Tatum. You know, I like Jaylen Brown. I think that dude is a baller. I just feel like some players are just a perfect fit for an organization. And like when they lost Al Horford, you can tell it hurt them, right? You brought him back. You brought is it Tice?
Yeah,
they brought Tice. Like, it's some people for Boston, when you bring back their core, they just feel better. Like, the locker room is just better. The team is just better.
I mean, it's that, and also it's the way that those guys play, and they accentuate the skills of
Tatum and Brown. Yeah. They do. And I think it helps out. Honestly, it helps out a player like Marcus Smart. He has more guys like him. Like grunt work dudes. And actually, truth be told, I do want to call, like, I think Jaylen Brown is a grunt work type of, he's a star with a grunt work type of mentality. Yeah. I think Jaylen Brown's a dog.
I'll be honest, I think Jaylen Brown is the second best defender on that team, and Robert Williams is the first best.
Oh, I think Jaylen Brown's a better defender than, you talking about Tatum compared to Tatum?
No, compared to our defensive player of the year, Marcus Smart.
He's smart. Marcus Smart's the best?
Jaylen Brown is a better defender. Oh,
yeah, I think he takes on the challenge. He's a dog. I think Jaylen Brown's just a dog. Ray, who you have, man?
I do have the Bucks at 7 as well, although because the absence of Chris Middleton, I'm walking on shaky ground, my friends. I knew that coming into the series, but Giannis, he is right now the best player in the league. I'm sorry. And when you have the best player, to me, that tips the scales in your favor. And Giannis, he's been unstoppable. But Boston plays such good team defense, as does Milwaukee. What surprised me yesterday, just real quick, is that Marcus Smart, he was bodying Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday usually bullies folks. Uh-huh. And Marcus Smart gave it right back. And it's just an entertaining series. But I do have the Bucks in 7 as well.
Cool, cool. All right. I'll take us a break. You want to take us a break, Will, or me take us a break? I can do it.
I can do it, man.
My man, cool.
Bivel shocked the world by defeating Canelo. We'll talk about that, what that means for the boxing world after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene on Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback.
More a solo. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole, Ray, and myself, Will T. We're part of Empire Media. All right, guys. Over the weekend, Cinco de Mayo weekend, Dimitri Bivel shocked the world and beat Canelo Saul Alvarez by unanimous decision. What are your thoughts, Wole? Well, let me ask you this. Did you see the fight?
Yeah, I saw the fight.
Okay.
Yeah, domination.
Did you pay for the fight?
That's a whole different question. Do you want that answer?
Like,
all right, cool. I thought the fight. I thought Bivel had a great fight. Like, it was a perfect fight. He fought the great fight. Great game plan going into the fight. He dominated on my card. I know they gave Canelo 3 rounds. I gave Canelo 1 round.
They gave him more than 3 rounds. It was one.
No, I'm talking about the actual, not the judges. I'm talking about the people who did the. I know they gave him the person who did the zone gave him 3 rounds. I know what you're talking about.
Chris Mannix.
Yeah, Chris Mannix gave him 3 rounds. The judges gave him, it was 115, 113, which I'm still trying to figure out. Like, where did you see that even being that? It was no swing rounds. They weren't that many swing rounds anyway for that to be the case. But anyway, I won't get into it. We'll get into that later. But in terms of my overall opinion of the fight, I was highly impressed with him, with Bivel. Like, the jabs, the combination off the jab, the distance, how he kept distance. Like, he wasn't scared of Canelo, of his defense. He didn't let Canelo really get through with some of the punches. And for Canelo's game plan, I thought Canelo looked for more of the trying to just knock him out mentality, and it just didn't work out. I thought that Canelo got a little gassed in that fight. But in terms of the game plan, Bivel, I was highly impressed with him.
Ray, go ahead, and then I'll give my thoughts.
I'm going to spend too much time because, well, you broke it down. Bivel, of course, came in with an awesome game plan, and I don't know if Eddie Reynoso in this fight tried to make the same adjustments in comparison to Valdez versus Shakur. When Valdez was obviously losing, he was saying, you got to go to his body. You're looking for one shot. With Canelo, what I felt is him and Canelo knew at some point, I can get him out of there because I'm Canelo. And Eddie Reynoso, I think, did not necessarily have the adjustments in place because they were shocked. Mm-hmm. You know, they had just this singular mindset going in because they were planning for the Triple G trilogy. They were planning for him moving up again. They're talking about finding some bigger guys. So this was humbling, if anything, Wilson camp to say, okay, while Canelo was off, we still have to do the basics. We got to fight to work. Because as you saw Bivel down, they would beat the heck up. You seen the next day, Canelo was swinging hard. Mm-hmm. But I feel as though he could have went to body more, trying to break him down and get that guard to come down. And I think that would have helped him win a few more rounds. Just think about it. All he needed to do was win the 12th round, and you got a draw. Simple as that. So Eddie Reynoso needs to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, what do we need to do to make sure this doesn't happen again? Because Marmali is a connected carry the sport. We cannot have to fall off. But that was a great fight by Bivol.
I'm pretty sure this has been said somewhere out there, but if you think about what Canelo tried to do, he tried to use the same strategy against Colin Smith and also Kovalev, Colin Smith, Kovalev, and I forgot who's the last guy. Billy Joe Saunders. Which was, you know, those guys were all physical. They were taller than him, right? And physically bigger than him. So what he tried to do was, behind that high guard, he wanted to beat their arms. And then once he beats their arms, they start to drop their, you know, they drop their guard a little bit. And then he's able to jab more to the midsection. Or, you know, or if they have that, while they have their guard up high, he's able to, you know, work the body. But ultimately, what happened was, you know, Canelo was throwing, you know, it may not have looked like it to us, but he was loading up and he was throwing very big shots. If you notice, Canelo, most of the punches that he landed those punches when he was very flat-footed, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't land those punches while he was on his toes, you know, so letting me know that he wasn't effectively jabbing and he wasn't effectively using his hook when he was in motion. You know, it was, in my opinion, it was a flawed plan by, you know, Canelo and his team, but I don't want to take away from Bivol because, you know, Bivol put on one of those, you know, potentially star-making performances, but I just don't believe he has the personality to be a huge superstar. Yeah. But it was definitely one of those star-making performances, and hopefully, you know, like he said, he alluded to, you know, he wants to be treated like a champion the next time they fight, when they fight in September. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the purse was Canelo was guaranteed $15 million for this purse, and Bivol was guaranteed $2 million.
That's right.
It's not necessarily right.
I mean, he's the star. I mean, it's just like Mike Tyson.
That's like 80-20.
Yeah, that's 80. He's saying, is this when that's you're Canelo? 80-20. It's about right, though.
No, it's not. Bivol was a champion. Well, Bivol, hold on. Yeah. Bivol was a champion.
Yeah,
Bivol was the champion at 175, yeah, right? You know, to be treated, you know, like a lower level fighter and only get, you know, if there's a guaranteed $17 million and you're only giving me two. I know there's a rematch clause, but if I was Bivol, I would hold this thing out as long as possible. For what?
We know the game, but you know this, Will. Like, come on. Like, what has Bivol done in terms of crowded of people coming to buy a ticket to see this fight?
I get it. I understand that. But at the same time, look, you want to fight me for my strap.
Yeah, it's like Mike Tyson. His purses were tremendously over a lot of people. It's Mike.
I can't recall it being like 80-20,
it's
though.
It's crazy. But other than like Evander, Evander was closer, but even Evander, he got and Evander is Evander. This is, I mean, no knock on, again, when I saw Bivol, I was highly impressed. Like, I thought, to me, off skill alone, I think he's one of the, I think he's one of the top boxers in the world, period. Like, to your point, I think off of performances, and now he got the thing about it, like for a lot of people, now he's on the stage to say, yo, I ain't an 80-20 now, because you got to fight the dude to put you on the stage for everybody to see.
Yeah, it's
got to
be 60-40.
Yeah,
at least.
No, I agree now, because now you've been put on the stage. You have now been showcased to see, like, you are that guy. Like, for instance, a lot of people think Winky was a good fighter, right? But he had to be put on the stage to make more money.
No, I get it. I understand that. Yeah. I totally understand that, and I respect that. But, you know, I'm interested to see. Well, I think, you know, going, you know, when the rematch, or if the rematch is signed, if you Bivol going into the second fight, you have to know, all right, I have to knock this dude out, or I have to knock him down multiple times. Because look, if they're going to score that fight 115 to 113, then if you're Bivol, you have to come in with the intention of, I have to knock this guy out.
I agree. I think so too. Because if that's a 115, 113 scorecard, then I have to knock him out. Yeah, I have to knock him down. Like, because that was doubt. Like, to me, that was no doubt.
Yeah.
Like, that beating was no doubt to, like, to a point where it should have been one of those scorecards where everything is about close to, like, I guess you could say, like, a 118, I think if it's 110 or 111, something like that. You know what I mean? Like, have to be one those that type of scorecard. It couldn't be, like, an almost even card. Like, you know what I mean? It was impossible. Like, I don't even think you can accidentally even, like, and I put it this way. I'm a pro Canelo dude. And I was like, nah. Like, if you want to, there's bias in, I know I get there's bias in every time. I'm not biased. There's bias for most folks who do a card. There is a certain bias of what you're looking for, right? If a boxer fits your style, you tend to do it. But when I watch that fight, I'm like, ugh. Like, there is no round. And I felt like the one round I gave him was a swing round. Like, the one round I gave him was a swing round.
At the I don't know, the closest to me, just looking at that fight, the closest I could have scored it would probably be 116, 112. That's me being extremely generous.
Exactly.
That's me being extremely generous.
What about you, Ray?
My scorecard?
Yeah,
I had it actually 116 and 112 because some of the swing rounds, like round one, I gave it to Canelo. Who probably won that round.
Yeah.
So I have no problem, but I agree with you guys. It was definitive. It shouldn't have been in question at all. And like I said, and a lot of other boxing analysts, if Canelo beats him in the 12th round because maybe Bibb was like, I'm just going post to the victory. And that's freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's boxing. And, I mean, come on now. We talk about our own personal bias. Boxing needs Canelo Alvarez. He's carried the sport.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's like Tank and Errol Spence are the closest to him that are draws. Everybody else, as talented as they are, Shakur, Terrence Crawford, hey, they just don't generate the same popularity worldwide as Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah.
This is crazy. This is true.
This is so true. You're listening to the Urban Sports scene, part of Empire Media at empiremedia.com. All right. And I have this question posted too as well. Canelo was known as number one pound for pound. With this loss, do you still have him number one? I'm gonna start with you, Will.
No, I don't. I think, you know, the easy answer would be either Bud or Errol Spence Jr.
Okay.
Right? Those are the easy answers. And I'm gonna stick with the easy answer because we're almost out of time.
Right.
I still do because I feel as though, although there's controversy about his competition, he's been the most active. He has fought numerous competitors, and he's won in spectacular fashion in all of those fights, whether it's been Billy Joe Saunders, to Caleb Plant, to Callum Smith, to Yildirim. He's dominated. Mm-hmm. And again, I know people don't like those fights. Of course, I want the Charlo and the Benavidez fight, just like the real boxing fans do. But at least, in comparison to Crawford and maybe not, and Spence had an accident. That's the only reason I can't put him in a discussion.
Yeah.
But Canelo's been the most active champion.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I get it. I'm talking about you.
I would leave him right where he is. And he stepped up. Stepped up again.
On Twitter, at Hot Spurs 55, said Canelo was going two divisions. IP lean. He is a middleweight. He said that on the press conference, he's a risk taker, and people need to appreciate that. Absolutely, he's still number one. On our IG page, at Lee.3449 said Bud, and I know George posted something on Facebook. I'll get to that later. But I think George, I'll paraphrase. George said you would have to lean towards Bud or Fury. Bud or Fury at this point in time. It's hard. Once I'm with you, Ray. Like, you want to one loss. I guess to me, Bivol is so talented. I don't want to, like, take that away from him. Like, and you're going up, do Bivol's bigger. There's a lot of things that you're looking into, and you're like, you know what? You're fighting a bigger dude, right? That's one. You're going to that.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, to because he took on the challenge of going up two weight classes.
Yeah.
But it's not just it's him taking on a challenge. It's the way he
lost. I agree. That's what I'm saying. That's what I do. Like, that's the thing that kind of like, and that holds me back is the way he lost. He was dominated. So now I'm
he didn't get knocked down, though.
Huh?
He didn't get knocked down.
He could have got knocked down.
There were points in that fight, I believe, like, I want to say the eighth round.
Yeah, where he got hit hard.
We got hit hard. And it's a testament to his chin.
His chin is mean. Like,
yeah, he has a granite chin.
But Ray, you're right. He didn't get knocked down, but he damn near got dominated all the whole fight, though. Like, you just said 16-12. We all said 16-12. Like, well, I didn't say 16-12. You and Will basically had, like, 16-12. And I feel like and you said it was swing. Like, you got, like, usually when you're pound for pound the one, like, you don't get dominated, like, the whole fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's my thing. Like, and again, I'm on the fence with it because I do want to reward him for what he did as a champ. Like, he's fought everybody. I know people want to say, like, oh, he ducked Earl, or like Earl tried to fight him, he said no. Charlo tried to fight him, he said no. Benavidez tried to fight him, he said no. But at the end of the day, like, he fought some top tier talent and he's taking them out. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of what you want to say. But if I had to be fair and not biased in the situation, I'm like, all right, it's between Tyson Fury and Bud. And you can make the argument that Fury over the top because he's a king of his heavyweight division. You could say that. But I would lean on Bud. I would say Bud's the best in the world.
Hey, no argument for me. Yeah, no argument. It's a great discussion.
Yeah, it's a great discussion that we'll continue to have as we look towards other big fights in the coming months. I can't think of...
The next big fight?
Charlo Castaño is this weekend. Well, that's going to be a good fight.
Well, yeah,
that's for Undisputed. And then you got Devin Haney, Kambosos, I believe Tank actually fights that bum Rowley.
Like, no one cares about him. I mean, Tank draws.
Devin Haney going for Undisputed.
Yeah, Tank draws people, but I don't think people really care about that fight. People are, tuning in to watch.
We have Crawford Spence later this year if they can get the numbers right.
That's what I care about, bro. That's what I care about.
Absolutely. Well, fellas, as part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our pre-taped interview with Bowie State University football coach Damon Wilson. After the break, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Get it.
Deuces on Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com.
Straight out of ATL. Got Young One chopping that thing, baby. Swiss Beats, full surface. Come on.
To the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole, and we are part of Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com. All right, it's time for HBCU Corner. This segment spotlights coaches and players within HBCU athletics. Here's an interview with Bowie State University football coach Damon Wilson.
Welcome back to HBCU Corner. Right now, we have Bowie State University football coach Damon Wilson. Coach Wilson has led Bowie State to 3 straight CIAA championships, including a 2021 championship. What's up, Coach Wilson, and welcome to the Urban Sports Thing, and also part of HBCU Corner.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, guys. And I'm excited to be here today with you guys.
It's great to have you on. So we asked like a nice little softball question, the first question, just to get things relaxed. I've never been to a CIAA tournament. I just want to know what the experience. How is it? What is that experience like?
And you shortchanging yourself. it's an event where if you're 16, 15 years old, you can have a good time, and mm-hmm. if you're 85, you can have a good time. So mm-hmm. there's something for everyone. But it's nothing but it's a positive environment, positive vibes. Just to see so many people come together to support their alma maters and that sort of thing at the tournament.
And is there a difference? I know this year was in Baltimore. Is it a difference for like Baltimore, North Carolina?
It's a difference this year for me just because, you know, it's right up the street from us. I didn't have to get on the flight and go. However, I still made sure I still had a hotel because you know sometimes you had them long nights, so you want to be able to stay there and get up in the morning and go to the events and that sort of thing. So that's the only major difference. But I think Baltimore did a great job this year with his first year hosting the tournament.
So Coach, I'm gonna kick it off with the first real question. I just want to tell you, I interviewed you a couple years back with the Roundball Report. And mind you, the Roundball Report is a basketball show. So it's like, why is a basketball show interviewing a football coach? Well, we caught you at halftime because, of course, the football team was being celebrated during the basketball game. Because right. I just feel like right now what you're building is amazing on campus. And the students, your success is just translate. Amir was on the squad at the time I interviewed you. So it was popping. And I just wanted to get a feel for how, you know, you've been able to build the program the way you've been. When I talked to you then, football season was over, but you said it's never over for me. I'm be on a recruiting path tomorrow. So just talk about building a powerhouse at Bowie State, your alma mater, and what it takes to do that.
Man, it's been a great experience, you know. And the first thing you have to do is surround yourself with good people, with good coaches. You know, those guys have done a great job recruiting and helping our guys matriculate in the classroom. And when you have success in the classroom, those guys are doing well on the football field as well. So now you don't have to worry about trying to teach a new set of players every year because you have guys, like I said, matriculating in the classroom. Therefore, they're eligible on the football field. And those guys brought into what we're doing. You know, it's been a process, but we're extremely excited about where we are now and the direction we're going. You know, we had a great recruiting class this past signing period. We're looking to pick up a few more late transfers to fill in some voids. But all in all, man, it's been a great experience.
So for you, Coach, I mean, like Ray mentioned, this is your alma mater. How is there like any pressure, you know, going back and just to be, you know, trying to build this program to something successful or something to some sort of a powerhouse than what you've done so far?
I don't want to say pressure. This is something that I envisioned as a student athlete at the university. And unfortunately, we weren't able to accomplish some of the things that we've been able to do recently here. And I think a lot of that, you don't win and you don't have success until it's your time to have that. You have to put the necessary work in and go through that roller coaster ride, if you will, to get to a point. And I think right now as a university, we've gotten to a point where we have a certain expectation, and that expectation isn't going to change just because you graduate 20 seniors. That next class is next man up mentality. Right. And one thing that we say all the time is tradition never graduates. And that's something that I believe in. So we can graduate 20 to 30 guys each year, but at the end of the day, my expectation isn't going to change.
That's awesome. And also, I mean, you brought this school the first CIAA championship. Like, can you talk about that? Like, you're the first, like, Bowie State's first CIAA championship. That's you. You know what I'm saying?
That's us as a program. You know, those are guys on the football field and the coaching staff putting in the necessary work to accomplish that. It was a great opportunity, a great experience, just because to win the first, you know, to be the first Bowie State University. They're playing football since 1970. And in order to get to the point we are today, there's a lot of people before us that gave us an opportunity. So we're just kind of trying to, you know, continue to use those guys' shoulders and springboards to continue to take this program to the next level.
You also won in 2021 this season. Who are some of the key players to help you, you know, achieve that goal?
Offensively, you got to go with quarterback Jerome Johnson, Khalil Wilkins. Those guys pretty, made our offense go. Of course, with our big fellas in front, we had some guys, Steph, Trafani, Justice Davis. Those guys did a great job opening up holes for our running back and allowing the quarterback to throw the ball downfield a little bit. And defensively, Joshua Pryor, you know, he's been a mainstay in our defense. We were able to pick up a guy like Miles Wolford, who played well for us this past year, and Tevin Singleton and Wes Bowers. So we had a number of guys that contributed. And that's one thing about our program. It's not going to be a one-person show. You know, we're going to do it by committee, but everybody's going to have an opportunity to get the individual accolades as we win as a team.
I appreciate that. So talk about some of the goals that you have. I know, of course, the ultimate goal is to win. But in terms of the school, the program, HBCUs are growing. What's your outlook for the future of the Bowie State football program?
My goal from day one is to win a national championship. I want to be the first HBCU to win a national championship. And I think when I said that 12 years ago, folks looked at me like I was crazy, being as though we didn't have a CIAA championship. Now you're talking about a program that's finished the top 10 in the country in D2 football at number 6 out of 162 programs. That's a major accomplishment, but we know there's still a lot of work ahead of us. I want to see a new stadium. It is something that we're working on right now. I think the university deserves a new stadium, and it's something that I said once again 12 years ago that I wanted to try to assist with that process and make sure that we get everything that we deserve. And that's one thing our administration is pushing to get certain things done. And, we're excited about that.
All right, so we're going to talk about your resume. I ain't going to try to age you here. You know, you still look good, bro. But you got some experience. you coached at Prairie View, of course, A&M. Shout out to them, Texas Southern. You've been at multiple HBCU programs. Just what does it mean to you to coach at HBCU? And again, what do you see the future of HBCU athletics? Because it's growing, it's continuing to move in the right direction. So where do you see it headed? And what does it mean to you personally?
You know, it's great. You know, and one thing that I always talk about is the HBCU experience or the HBCU culture. I don't look at my resume as coaching at HBCUs from a football standpoint, but the other entities that goes with coaching at HBCU is just about that culture, about that experience, about people that look alike and have some similar backgrounds, getting the necessary support in that family environment. You know, you talk about the homecoming experience, talking about the Greek life. You're able to encounter some things at HBCU that you may not have at other universities. And that's something that's really near and dear to me. It's something that when you look across the country and the career fields, you know, some of our most prominent people graduate from HBCUs. So it's a blessing to have the opportunity to have an impact on so many young men's lives on a daily basis.
All right, so I want to pause real quick. I love everything you're saying, of course, but you mentioned homecoming. When you were on campus, back when you were younger, describe that experience in comparison to how it is today. We went to UMES, by the way, so our homecoming was always at a different time. Yeah. But right. I'm sure you're familiar with us as well.
Yeah, because we didn't have a football team. We didn't have a football team. We had a basketball homecoming.
We had a good basketball homecoming, no doubt. So for me as a student, you know, And it's really interesting because I say the same thing to our guys now. I'm really enjoying myself now as an alum and the head coach at the university versus when I was a student, because as a student athlete, homecomings weren't for me. It was for the alumni. You know, it was for the alumni. And I've told every president, well, the two presidents I worked for at Bowie State University, that I'm an alumnus first before the head coach. So at the end of the day, at a homecoming event, we're going to make sure we handle our business on the field so I can have a good time with my fellow alums after the game. And that's something, that whole week is about giving back to the alumni. And it's our obligation as a football program to make sure we do what we need to do to show the people that went to the university before us, you know, how much we respect and appreciate what they've done for the university.
Oh, yeah, that's great. He's right, though. It is about the alumni. You know, homecoming is about that.
I got to do better.
I enjoy myself now, for sure.
I know, that's right.
I got to do better about that. You know, but hey, grown-up parties are awesome, man. No doubt.
they're way better, right? The grown-up parties are way better. Hey, Coach. Hey, Coach, thanks for being on. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, guys, like I said, I appreciate you guys for having me on, man, and what you guys are doing and highlighting HBCUs and just sports in general. It's great, man. So anything that I can ever do to help you guys, man, I'm a phone call away. So I appreciate you guys.
Well, thanks, Coach. And thanks for being on HBCU Corner. We appreciate you.
You got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
No doubt. Take it easy, man.
Wasn't he dope, man? Again, that was Coach Damon Wilson. He's the head coach of Bowie State University football team. So, hey, man, support the program. Support HBCUs. You can also find the video to this interview on our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel. All right, time to end the show. So make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene, and on our And like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page as well. Make sure, again, that you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel. All right. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Amplifier Media, at amplifiermedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Amplifier shows as well as other great content. Again, thank you all for tuning in to the Urban Sports Scene. You know, we appreciate y'all. We still drop out hits. Bangers, that's what I like to call them. So what I'm about to say, oh, you know. What I'm about to say? Oh, I know. Wait. I know. Here you go. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Saying for ages. You dig? Deuces. Hey, Mega. Lead us out, big homie.